Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that your appendix might serve a useful biological function after all. The appendix has long been grouped in with the body's other vestigial parts. You know, those parts of the body that gradually fall out of use as we adapted to more advanced lifestyles than our ancestors. These are things like the tailbone, which are mostly extinct, or other things like wisdom teeth that are going that way. Then there are parts like the appendix that just seem to stubbornly stick around, largely unnoticed. To get to the bottom of the appendix's evolutionary resilience, researchers from Midwestern University analyzed data from hundreds of mammal lineages that spanned 11 million years. And researchers found that the appendix made multiple comebacks in humans and other mammals across this great span of time. More specifically, the organ evolved at least 29 times and possibly as many as 41 times, and it had only been lost 12 times. Researchers believe this is not only proof that the appendix isn't a vestigial structure, but also that the appendix may have several adaptive purposes. So, what is it good for? Well, it seems the appendix may benefit your gut. The appendix may be a haven for the good intestinal bacteria that helps us keep some infections at bay. The Midwestern University researchers found that the species that had the appendix had higher concentrations of an immune tissue that's known to stimulate the growth of certain types of gut bacteria. Another previous study found that people without an appendix were 4 times more likely to have a recurrence of colitis, which is an inflammation that can cause all sorts of chaos in your abdomen. So don't disregard that appendix just yet. This week I learned that cramming your exercises in can be just as beneficial as exercising regularly. This new research out of England, which is detailed in Quartz, found that adults who crammed some amount of exercise into just 1 or 2 days per week still had lower risks of cancer and heart disease than those who didn't exercise at all. The study used a measure of exercise recommended by the World Health Organization, which is about 150 minutes of moderate exercise or 75 minutes of high-intensity exercise every week. Researchers analyzed data from a long-term study of about 60,000 adults in their late 50s. The people were split into 4 categories. One group was the weekend warriors, those who didn't work out at all during the week but met those exercise requirements on Saturdays and Sundays. The other 3 groups were those who spread those requirements out, those who exercised but didn't meet those requirements, and those who didn't exercise at all. The good news is that all 3 exercise groups had lower death rates than those who didn't exercise at all, and those who exercise regularly were only slightly better off than the weekend warriors or the more occasional exercisers. These findings are far from perfect, but at least it does show that some amount of exercise is better than none. This week, I learned what might have killed the largest shark this world has ever seen. This massive beast was called the Carcharodon megalodon, and it prowled the world's oceans for about 14 million years before dying about 2.5 million years ago. Now, if Jaws sent shivers up your spine, then the megalodon would have been a thing of nightmares. It was 3 times the size of Jaws. The megalodon could grow up to 50 feet and could weigh up to 65 tons, which is about 6 African elephants. The megalodon wasn't quite as large as the blue whale, which is still the world's most massive mammal, but the shark does get away with the award of the largest carnivorous fish to have ever lived on Earth. So, what could have brought down such a large predatory animal? According to a study out of Italy detailed in New Scientist, the shark's food may have been at fault. researchers analyzed the fossils of marine mammals that lived in the ocean 7 million years ago. They were able to identify distinctive scrapes and marks and wounds on the bones that were made by the shark's huge serrated teeth. Those markings suggested that the megalodon preferred hunting dwarf whales and seals that are now extinct, and that disappearance may have triggered the end of this predator. But the shark's demise was part of a larger domino effect that all started with a cooling of the climate millions of years ago. Colder temperatures trapped water in polar ice caps and glaciers, which led to drops in sea levels, which caused rapid changes in the coastal environments where these smaller whales lived. Meanwhile, the environmental changes favored larger, open-ocean whales, and seasonal food booms around the poles helped drive the evolution of larger whales like the giant humpback and the blue whales that we have today. And those whales would have been much too large for the megalodon to hunt. So the megalodon was in a tight spot. As the megalodon's main food source was dropping, he really should have been forced out into the colder open ocean with the whales. But our massive predator friend was too used to warm waters and likely wasn't capable of making those massive cross-Earth migrations to the poles for food. It also didn't help that around this time, white sharks and killer whales were starting to evolve, and recent research had suggested that competition from those new predators may have pushed the weakened megalodon into extinction. This week I learned that older dogs do not love your baby talk, but puppies sure do. Researchers had a group of female volunteers look at photos of dogs and read phrases like, "Who's a good boy?" and "Hello, cutie!" The volunteers also read those phrases to a human, which I can only imagine was an awkward exercise. As expected, women use their normal voices with humans, a higher-pitched, sing-songy voice with dogs, and then they made their voices 21% higher when the photos were of puppies. In the study, researchers then played the recordings to a group of puppies and a group of adult shelter dogs. They found a stark difference. When the baby talk recordings were played, puppies went wild. They barked and ran toward the loudspeakers. They crouched down playfully. When the normal voices were played, the puppies weren't nearly as enthused. As for the adult dogs, well, they basically didn't care about the baby talk. When it played, the adult dogs had a quick look at the speaker and then basically ignored it, going back to chewing their bones. Unfortunately, researchers don't yet know why puppies respond so strongly to baby talk and adult dogs don't, but they do have a theory that mature animals have learned to be more choosy. They've learned to respond to only the familiar voices and faces because those are the ones that will feed, love, and care for them. Those naive, silly puppies are just too easy to please. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. To read more about any of the facts I've mentioned or to check out more of our series, including 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainers, go to theweek.com/podcasts. And if you like what you hear, subscribe, tell a friend, or give us a rating or review on iTunes. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.